This is Glorious Food at KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington, your show about all things food on the beautiful, green, verdant Olympic Peninsula. I'm your host, Mara Lathrop. Today we premiere our homegrown version of our theme song, Glorious Food, after which we're going on a food adventure at On a True Farm with Max Lindert. We're going to be harvesting, processing, and cooking some garlic. Our farm report today is a very special edition with Kathy Meyer from the Port Townsend Food Co-op, and we're going to finish up with some thoughts I have on clipping recipes out of magazines and cooking them up. Glorious food! We've got a brand new version of the song Glorious Food, locally created and produced here in Port Townsend for our show, Glorious Food. I was talking to my friend Carla Main, and she talked to her friend George Resendez, and he talked to his friend John Morton, and they came up with the sexy, jazzy version of Glorious Food that I think represents Port Townsend. We're going to play the whole song now. This is Glorious Food from the musical Oliver, lyrics and music by Lionel Bart, and you'll be hearing Carla Main on vocals, George Resendez on guitar, John Morton on clarinet, and the whole thing was mixed and engineered by George, with a hand from the Glorious Food producer, C.J. Lazenby.
Is it worth the waiting for? If we live till 84, all we ever get is gruel. Every day we say our prayer. Will they change the bill of fare? Still we get the same old gruel. There's not a crust, not a crumb we can find. Can we beg? Can we borrow or catch? But there's nothing to stop us from getting a thrill when we all close our eyes and imagine food, glorious food. Hot sausage and mustard while we're in the mood. Cold jelly and custard. Pudding and saveloys. What next is the question? Rich gentlemen have it, boys. Indigestion. Food, glorious food. We're anxious to try it. Three banquets a day. That's our favorite diet. Just picture a great big steak, fried, roasted, or stewed. Oh, food, wonderful food, marvelous food, glorious food. Food, glorious food. What is there more handsome? A gulped, swallowed, or chewed? That we dream about, what brings on a sigh, piled peaches and cream about, 6 feet high, food, glorious food, eat right through the menu, just loosen your belt, 2 inches, and then you work up a new appetite in this interlude with food, magical food, wonderful food, marvelous food, fabulous food, beautiful food, glorious food.
And now, boys and girls, it's time for Adventures with Food.
Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
Today, we're out here at On a True Farm with Max Lindert. He started On a True just over a year ago, and this is his first harvest this year. Max.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are here today to work on a garlic project with you. So I hear we're going to be harvesting some and cleaning some, and then we're going to be cooking some.
That's right. Yes, it's the time of the year that we harvest garlic, and we've been working on our harvest for about a month now.
Sweet. Let's head on out to the field.
Excellent. Sounds good.
So here we are walking along by some beautiful black Tuscan kale and beautiful red rib Swiss chard.
Okay, here we are on the very last of the garlic. The soil is nice and soft, but I still like to loosen it with a transplanting shovel, a narrow kind of spade. So we just kind of loosen it, and we pull the garlic out. Shake the dirt off then. This looks like a nice big one. It's 3-4 inches.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so when we're harvesting garlic, what we're looking to do is to make sure that we have 4 or 5 green leaves on top yet, because each leaf represents a wrapper on the garlic head. Just as the bottom leaves start to die is when we want to dig it out.
I had always sort of heard that you were supposed to wait for them to die and fall all the way over, but...
Well, that'll make it so the cloves are going to be exposed and they won't store as long.
Uh-huh.
The wrapper is what will help keep your cloves protected for long-term storage. Now, soft-neck garlic, this is hard-neck garlic, that will tip over when it's ready, too.
When you pull a head of garlic out of the ground, you bring a lot of ground with it, don't you? And so... Typically, would you make this dirt stay here?
I would definitely shake the dirt off here before taking it up. I want my good dirt to stay in the field.
Gotcha.
Okay, here we are in one of the greenhouses that we're growing peppers in. It's a nice and dry and warm with good airflow. So it's a place where I initially put the garlic to dry out for about a week. I cover it up with a shade cloth so that it doesn't get a sunburn and ruin the cloves. So let's haul some of that out of here up to the cleaning shed.
Okay.
So we can work on the garlic there.
I'm standing beside Max's John Deere tractor, and the bucket in front is absolutely full of dried heads of garlic with the stalk still on them, and we're about ready to go up to the shed and clean them. Well, we're back up by the driveway where we first came in, and there's a little Quonset hut set up here with a tarp over it, and underneath it there is enough garlic to keep the vampires away for a very, very long time.
That's true. We have no vampire problems out here at On a True Farm. We've got all kinds of different sorts of garlic here that we've been working on.
And what is it that you like about each of these varieties that you grow?
Well, this variety that matured last here is a purple striped garlic. It's a hardneck garlic, and it's really delicious roasted or, you know, cooked with on the grill. We have 2 softneck varieties of garlic, both Washington heirloom garlics, one from eastern Washington and one from the San Juan Islands.
And what is special about each of them?
The one from the eastern Washington, the Inchulam garlic.
Inchulam.
Is a really big garlic cloves. Everybody thinks it's an elephant garlic when it's not. It's really just a softneck garlic that grows real large. It likes western Washington very much. And the other one is Natuka rose.
I've heard of that one.
And that's from the San Juan Islands, and it's just a beautiful silver skin garlic that makes nice braids.
Okay, Max, let's get to work. What are we going to do? Oh, and we get to do the sitting down.
This is nice for a farmer to be able to sit down and work sometimes. Okay, so what we're going to start with is we grab a garlic. I'll show you on this first one here.
Yeah.
We're going to trim the roots off.
All right. And you've just got a little pair of clipper scissors, and you're just trimming them as far down as you possibly can, it looks like. All right,
okay,
done.
That looks good. So now we're going to take a cutoff shears, and we're going to cut the stem on the garlic. We're going to leave it a little longer than we do in the store yet for this next stage of drying.
So that's about 3.5 or 4 inches there, right?
Yes.
Of stalk.
Okay, now's the fun part. You just got to gently rub your hands around the garlic to take off some of the outer wrappers. Just get the first couple of loose layers off so it looks clean.
Okay.
So we don't want to have any dirt in between the wrapper. That can invite mold and such.
Yeah. One more question. You said to leave them a little long at this stage because of what we're going to do in the next stage. And is what you're talking about cooking them over a...
Not exactly, no.
All right.
What I'm talking about here is if you look inside at the wrapper, you still see there's some green in there,
yes,
right?
Yes, right.
So this is not fully cured yet, this garlic.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave it out here in this open shed with lots of airflow and let it finish curing before I bag it up and store it.
How much longer is it going to take from this stage where there's a millimeter wide ring of green still that you can see looking down the neck?
You know, it depends on the weather, really. If we have some more hot, dry weather, it should only be a couple more weeks.
Oh, okay.
You clean? Well, you did a nice job cleaning up that garlic, actually.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Well, thank you. What do we do now?
Well, we can, these look so good, maybe we should cook them.
Should we try a different couple of kinds
there
so we
go.
Can have a little
that.
Taste off?
Yeah, let's do that.
This one that I cleaned, variety.
It's a purple stripe. It's chestnut red.
Chestnut red, a purple striped garlic.
How about we try a porcelain garlic?
Oh, sure.
Called Music. It has nothing to do with listening music. The gentleman's name was actually, last name was Music. Yeah, this comes from Central Russia. It's like a Georgian garlic. It's kind of nice, after the Cold War, a lot of these garlics were never available to the West. And now we've got access to some of these great garlics that we never had access to before.
All right, here we go.
I don't roast garlic like you're supposed to.
Well, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to smear it with a little bit of olive oil and put some salt on it and cook it for a long time in the oven. Low and slow and let it just sort of melt into itself, right?
Right.
But you do something else.
No, I just sort of toss it on the grill right with whatever else you're cooking, your sweet corn, and just let it get all charred and blackened on the outside and feel it with the tongs when it starts to get soft. I set it aside in a cool corner of the grill and just let it rest a little bit and then just squeeze the garlic out of the clove wrappers.
Well, we brought the bread and we brought some butter.
Excellent.
So here let's get to work.
Okay.
So how hot, we're doing this on your gas grill outside of your place. So how high do you have the?
High, full heat.
Full heat.
Yes. Have you ever roasted peppers?
Oh, sure.
Where you blacken them a little bit and then put them in a paper bag?
Right.
That's kind of my technique for the garlic. We're kind of doing the same thing as we would with bell peppers.
And they've been on there for about 5 minutes so far. We're going to get another five or so before you move it to the indirect heat. There is no oil, there is no salt, there is no nothing involved. It's just heat and vegetables. Okay, I think that this is going someplace because I just got my nose smacked by a giant hit of roasting garlic. This smells really good, Max.
It does.
Oh, and the lid comes up, and there's a little bit of garlic oil and juice bubbling out down onto the grill and sort of bubbling away into a wonderful odor.
Well, how about we get that bread on that grill to warm it up a little bit?
Let's do it.
Maybe put the bread up on the top shelf.
There you go.
Okay, this garlic looks nice and soft now. We'll take it off.
Oh, that's beautiful. The one that you're pulling apart right now is the...
This one looks like the Music garlic.
Okay.
And this is the chestnut purple stripe garlic. So you want to mash that into the
butter? I certainly
do.
Okay. And now it all smells like garlic and butter mixed together.
Mmm, delicious. I bet you the bread is warm. Let's take it off of the grill.
Let's start with the Music, okay? The Music garlic. So I am putting some Music garlic and butter on a slice of Pain d'Amour baguette, and I am handing it to my producer, CJ Lazenby, who is going to take the first bite while I hold her microphone for her. Go ahead.
Mmm.
CJ, I'm going to let you chew for another couple of seconds, and then I want you to say the first word that comes to mind about what you're doing right now.
It's got a nice, light garlic flavor to it. It's not spicy either. It's almost onion-like to me.
All right. Max, come on, let's dig in and get some. And we're joined by a couple of your kids here. Would you like to introduce them to us?
Here we have Alex.
Hi, Alex.
And Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
Hello.
Would you like some roasted garlic and butter on bread?
Sure, I'll try it.
Let's do it.
Okay, me first.
CJ, I agree with you. The flavor is garlicky, kind of oniony, and very, very, very mild. You got to pay attention to what you're doing when you're eating this so that you don't miss any of its subtle flavor.
Yes, indeed. The roasted garlic, I mean, I use descriptors like nutty and almost creamy.
Yeah.
It's the oils in it that seem to really come through, and we're tasting subtle flavors in the garlic oil. It's like almost potato-y in a way.
Yeah, very potato-y, definitely. So now I'm going to try the purple stripe. I don't know if it's possible for there to be anything better than that roasted music garlic, though. Mm. I'm sorry that I'm going to taste something else, and that taste is going to go away. Here I go.
Definitely different.
It is definitely different. This one is a little starchier tasting. It has more of the potato flavor that you were talking about.
To me, a bit more of a garlicky lasting note. I could taste garlic after I've eaten it now. This all started in November. We were sitting outside here, just right here where we're cooking, taking the cloves and breaking them apart to make individual pieces for planting. So it's been 9 months to enjoy this.
To get to this piece of bread with butter and roasted garlic on it, it was worth every minute of it, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed. Indeed it is. And to grow these gourmet garlics like this and have these wonderful subtle taste differences between them compared to just your standard issue grocery garlic, it's really a treat.
Max, thanks for the tour and thanks for the roasted garlic.
You're welcome. Thanks for stopping out at the farm. Hopefully I'll see you at the market this weekend.
I will see you at the market this weekend.
Garlic's stinky and delicious. Garlic's healthy and nutritious, and it tastes so fine.
I'm Mara Lathrop, and you're listening to Glorious Food on KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington.
Garlic, great with beef or fish or chicken.
And now it's time for the farm report. It's high summer, the crops are all coming in, and the farmers around Port Townsend are too busy for the farm report this month. So instead, we've got Kathy Meyer here in our studio talking about what's going on with the produce department and the local farmers down at the Port Townsend Food Co-op. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Maura.
So who's bringing what in right now?
Well, everybody's bringing everything in, all the produce you'd ever want. It's like the farmer's market every day at the co-op.
What is really in season with great prices and ready to buy in bulk to put away or preserve?
Well, right now we have cases of pickling cucumbers, and that's $29.99 a case.
Yeah.
And you know, Linda Davis brought in gooseberries from Solstice Farm.
Nice.
So I'm thinking about making some gooseberry jam. And then we have just about everything that you would want. We have assorted types of kale, green and red curly kale. And we have mustard greens, spinach, salad mix, mizuna, stir-fry mix. A lot of the greens, herbs, garlic chives. Just, it's abundant right now. If you've ever looked at there's a metal board right by the door for produce. It has magnets on it, and it tells you what's in the store that's local from and what farm it's from.
So it's just right over where the freezers start, where the big doorway is into the back of the produce section, right?
Correct, yeah. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, I have, and I look for it to see who's bringing what to market so that I can support our local farmers, too.
Uh-huh, yeah, it's great.
What's going to be coming up over the next several weeks that we should be keeping our eyes peeled for, and who's bringing it in?
Well, I know that Dharma Ridge is going to bring in creamers. Potatoes, creamer potatoes, you know, tomatoes are the big thing coming up. And then we have green beans and spring onion bunches, both purple and white. And I heard today that we're getting in plums, local plums.
Local plums,
yeah.
Nice.
So that's another food preservation thing, and then cucumbers.
Terrific. Kathy, thank you for coming by the studio and giving us the overview of the Farm Report for our area. It was great.
Thank you, Mara. It was good to see you.
Come on to my house, to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, a plum, and an apricot or two.
I love reading cookbooks. And even more, I love reading cooking magazines. I love all the photographs and the advice columns and the features about the 10 kitchen gadgets you absolutely have to have. Over the years and at various times as cooking magazines have come and gone, I've had subscriptions to one or another of many of them. Bon Appetit, Savour, The Late Great Gourmet, and does anybody remember Cuisine magazine? While it lived, I love that one. At one time or another, I've read them all, studied them all, drooled over their food centerfolds, and probably like you, I have clipped magazine recipes and stuck them in folders with every intention of cooking them, although in reality, I rarely do. Why? Maybe upon second reading, the recipe turned out to be overly complicated, or it had one or two or 10 obscure ingredients I'd have to chase down, or in the final analysis, it just didn't sound all that delicious. Besides, these days, I don't follow recipes much. I more or less cook as I go, cook with what I've got, season at my whim, start with a dish that I know how to make, and then see where my instincts take me. Like I tell George frequently, if you like dinner tonight, you better eat all you can because next time it's not going to be exactly the same. Anyway, cooking magazines. Last week, I spent almost an hour in my doctor's waiting room, which is something I really don't mind, as long as I don't have to do it very often, because there are a lot, and I mean a lot, of magazines with recipes in medical doctors' waiting rooms. Most of them aren't cooking magazines per se. They're women's magazines and home and gardening magazines and health and lifestyle magazines, and all of them have at least one article about food and eating, and all of them have at least a couple of recipes. I have always disdained these generalist publications as waiting room reading material, something that might briefly hold a person's attention, but nothing so absorbing as to keep you from hearing your name when the nurse calls for you. And so last week, about 45 minutes into my hour-long wait to see my doctor, I picked up a six-month-old dog-eared issue of Sunset Magazine, one of those home, gardening, travel, and cooking combo magazines that make me feel inadequate in multiple facets of my life, especially the decorating and yard work areas. I thumbed through, staring longingly, sighing wistfully at the spreads on somebody's impossibly perfect landscaping, some other buddy's homemade, handcrafted, bentwood box of a teardrop-shaped tiny home on wheels, things so visionary, so extraordinary that they really do belong in magazines so that the rest of us can have them for inspiration or aspiration or a yardstick for measuring our inadequacies. Take your pick. And then, upon turning a particular page somewhere deep inside Sunset Magazine, I suddenly felt right at home. There before me was a recipe for short ribs. I love short ribs. I've been eating short ribs for as long as I've been eating solid food. We went to my grandparents' house for Shabbos dinner every Friday night, and my grandma Sophie frequently made an incredible side dish called simis, a long, slow-roasted mixture of onions, carrots, prunes, or sometimes raisins, salt and pepper, honey, ginger, and short ribs. Very Jewish, very Eastern European, not a New World ingredient anywhere in sight. And Grandma also made a wonderful meat borscht, a stewy soup thick with cabbage and onion and celery, potatoes, few tomatoes. She usually made it with oxtails, which was plenty good. But occasionally, for reasons that I do not know, she made it with short ribs, and it was even better. Of course, the Sunset article wasn't really about short ribs. It was about turnips, a vegetable that I didn't like at all as a kid, but have come to appreciate as an adult. And it wasn't even really an article either. It was just a large headline, "Turn on to turnips!" exclamation point, and three recipes featuring the vegetable of the hour with mouthwatering photographs of the prepared dishes. They all looked good. They all looked great. But pickled turnip and turnip green salad didn't resonate, if you know what I mean. And the turnips, Anna, sounded maybe a little too good as they were loaded with butter, bacon, and cheese. No, the recipe that caught my eye was Korean-style braised short ribs and turnips. And as I read it, my interest grew because I already had everything on the ingredient list with the exception of the short ribs and the turnips themselves. Plus, and this is what really made me sit up and take notice, although I had never put this combination of ingredients together in a pot, as I rolled the list around on my mental tongue, I could almost taste how good, how almost familiar it was. You know, they say that every culture has its own version of all the basic dishes, a stew, a braise, a bread stuffed with meat or veggies. The French have coq au vin, and Jewish grandmas have chicken in a pot. Cowboys on the range make chili, and the Greek people make gigante beans. And whether they're called humbaos or pierogies or tamales, everybody makes some kind of bread stuffed with some kind of meat. I couldn't help but be curious. Was this recipe for short ribs and turnips the Korean-style version of my Grandma Sophie's Simmas? There was only one way to find out. A few days later, short ribs and turnips at the ready, my kitchen counter lined with the soy sauce, dry sherry, fresh ginger, garlic, and grated apple that would flavor my broth while the short ribs stewed and the turnips, which were added toward the end of the whole cooking process, did their thing. It was simple to make. The ribs were boiled in water for an hour, after which the flavoring ingredients were unceremoniously dumped on in. Then after another hour or so, the turnips went in along with some carrots and onions. Then once the vegetables were tender, it was ready for a last-minute addition of toasted sesame seeds and toasted sesame seed oil. I served the ribs and turnips in big, wide soup bowls, swimming in their sweet and salty, savory broth. My impression was that it didn't taste anything at all like my grandma's Simmas, but it was really, really good. Will I make it again? I will. But like every cook worth her salt, I'll make a couple of changes, a little less soy, a little more ginger, and most importantly, I'll cook it a day ahead and let it sit in the fridge overnight. Because as good as the Korean-style short ribs with turnips were at dinner, the flavors continued to deepen and mellow so that the leftovers the next day, they weren't the same, but they were every bit as tasty as my Grandma Sophie Simmas. I think she'd approve. If you'd like the link to Sunset Magazine's Korean-style short ribs with turnips or recipes for my Grandma Sophie's Simmas or her cabbage borscht with short ribs, drop me a line at gloriousfood@kptz.org.
Tulip, turnip, rosebud, aruba, filet, plain beef stew. Tell me, tell me, tell me, dream faint. What am I to you?
Glorious Food airs every month on KPTC 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. Thanks to CJ Lazenby, producer and sound engineer extraordinaire, and thanks to KPTC's station manager, Nora Petrich, and programming manager, Larry Stein. And remember, everybody's got to eat.